Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is so beautiful to see you.
I want you to want me.
Hey out there, live music fans. Welcome to episode number 10 of First Concert Memories, the monthly sidecast from your buddies at the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast, where we have guests on to talk about a fateful night in their lives when they saw a band for the first time ever and how that affected them, how it changed their lives, how it altered the course of their future. And last month, we had on the lovely and talented Amanda Lehman from the UK, who's a solo artist. We've had her on our show before. She may be best known for touring with Steve Hackett and his band when they're in the UK and parts of Europe. She's a fantastic guitar player, has a beautiful voice. And she related the story about seeing Ritchie Blackmore in Rainbow for the first time when she was just a 12-year-old girl, how she hopped on the train and went down to Brighton and went to the hall and pushed her way all the way up to the front to see this guitar god, who obviously had an influence on her because she's now a fantastic guitar player today and making her own music. Kind of a neat story that eventually she got to go down there and play that with Steve, coming full circle in her life there. That was pretty neat. We were glad to have her on. This week, we do have another musician. You may not know his music, but if you follow us on Twitter, you may have seen some of our interactions with him. His name is Nige Savage from the UK. He's about our age. Maybe music isn't his number one occupation. He is in a band called Chupacabra, and we're going to talk a little bit about that on the show. But Nige has been a long-time listener, and we interact with him a lot on social media. And he was one of the first people to kind of shout out and say, hey, this First Concert Memory show, this is a great idea. Because everybody has memories of their first concert, or the first concert when they saw their favorite band, or the first time that was a very special night in their lives for some reason. And it's great to share. Because, yes, we as fans have those memories, but so do artists, and so do journalists and writers. And Nige has always been very good to us. In fact, he created the music for the intro and outro of our weekly show, The Ugly American Werewolf in London. Now, of course, we appreciate that. It really makes our show sound better and more professional, and we would love to pay Nige for that. Only problem is, there's not a lot of money coming in on the show. There's not a lot to pay him with. But Nige couldn't have been nicer about it. He's like, no, I don't even want your money. No, just keep doing the show. And we talked to him for a while after he gave us this music and told us that the first time he saw Metallica was a week before Cliff Burton died. I said, oh my goodness. We didn't even catch on to Metallica till years later. So not only were you an early adopter, a true believer, but you got to see them with Cliff and in close proximity to his death. We got to get you on First Concert Memories. So we've been sitting on this one for a while. And we're so glad that Nige accepted our invitation to come on and do the show. We had a fun conversation. And it just shows how creating this show, The Ugly American Werewolf in London, and now our monthly First Concert Memories, shows how you can create a community of people all around the world, even though you've never sat down together and had a beer or a conversation. Maybe you never worked together. You don't know each other's families, but you have something in common. It's your love for this music. And so I really think you're going to enjoy this show we're doing with Nige here on seeing Metallica on the Master of Puppets Tour 1986. First, we have a little bit of business to take care of. We love to mention the fact that we are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, a family of about 100 different shows, all music related. There really is something in there for everyone. You can check out more at pantheonpodcast.com or follow on socials at Pantheon Pods. And we have to give a shout out to our incredible sponsor, RareVinyl.com, based in the UK, guys. And even though they're based in the UK, they ship all around the world and they collect records and vinyl from all over the world as well. So you can really find that rare Japanese issue or that picture disc that you always wanted or the first print of your favorite album. It's probably there in the over 250,000 items in stock at RareVinyl.com. And what's killer for you collectors is we've got a code you can use at checkout, UGLY, U-G-L-Y, that if you use that, you can save 10% off your entire order. Not just one item in your order, but your entire order. That's a one-time code, so don't just go get an 8 quid single and save yourself 80p. Go out there and buy that box set you always wanted. Somebody came on and bought about 12 different picture discs in one order, and I thought it was so cool. I didn't even know who some of the bands or the albums were, but apparently they did, and they got a real treasure trove. Cost them over 300 quid, but they saved more than 30 quid by using the code UGLY. And if you're listening to this, hey, please let us know who you are. Send us some pictures of your bounty, because that was an amazing order. And we appreciate it, because not only it helps your record collection, but it helps our show as well. So go to RareVinyl.com, use the code UGLY, save yourself a big fat 10% on a big fat order. Now back to Nige. So great chatting with him. We kind of connected over socials a few times. We had one Zoom. We were talking about utilizing some of his music in our show. But this was a great conversation we'd have. He was in America on business, so the timing worked out well. And we kind of took a deep dive on Metallica and what this night meant to him. So let's jump to it, folks. We're talking with longtime listener of our show and guitarist in Chupacabra, Nige Savage. Talk about the night he saw Metallica in September of 1986. We created First Concert Memories as a side cast so that...
It's awesome.
Well, thank you. No, you're one of the first... We've actually gotten a lot of compliments on it, but you're one of the folks who really reached out on social media. Like, this is a great series because there's so many great stories out there and there's so many great times. The first time you saw a band, and we've been able to share some really amazing stories, and we're getting artists on. We've got other podcasters on, you know, some journalists on and writers. And I'm like, well, how about a listener, like someone who listens to our show? It's like, how can, you know, we make the show better? Let's listen to the listeners. And by the way, we don't have any money to pay you for the great music that you've given us to include on our intro and outro. So maybe this is it. I don't know.
No. Listen, first of all, I would never expect anything. Second of all, I'm just honored that you feature my music in your program. And thirdly, there's no money in music anyway. If you go into the music expecting to make money, then you're an idiot.
So, right.
For all those reasons, I'm totally cool with it.
Or podcasters, by the way, for everybody out there, right? There's one Joe Rogan, and then there's all the rest of us. Right. Right? Yeah. So I'm really psyched to be able to talk about this Metallica show with you, because Jackson and I saw our first Metallica show together. Well, it was 32 years ago now, Jackson.
Don't make it sound like that. It's true.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it was on the Black Album tour that went, what, 2.5-3 years or whatever. And they did this like Florida stint. And so we went down to see him in a place that was not real big. I mean, it was probably 8,000 people, something like that. It was so small, though, they couldn't put themselves in the round like they were kind of doing on that tour. They kind of stuck them at the end down there. But it was still amazing. They played for more than 3 hours. We were worn out.
Right.
But when you said, you know, you saw them way before we did, and you saw them with Cliff not too long before the world lost Cliff, I'm like, now that's a story. And, you know, obviously you've grown up to become a musician in your own right and know a hell of a lot about metal music. So I'm like, this is one we got to have, right, Jackson?
Well, yeah. And here's the thing. You sent me the set list for this deal. So, I mean, first of all, I guess we can start off by saying this was September 20th, 1986, at the Birmingham Odeon.
Birmingham.
And I'm going to tell you right now, this set list makes me angry. It makes me angry because it's so awesome.
It's so kick-ass.
Oh, my God. I know. Oh, my God. There's no Injustice for All. There's no Black Album. There's no anything from the 90s. There's nothing new. I would watch them play this entire set tonight if they would do it. This is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Justice is my favorite Metallica album, right?
Mine as well.
So obviously, there was no Justice on that, of course. Mm-hmm. But at the top, for the time, it was almost the perfect set list. I have one change that I would make, but we can talk about
it. We'll get to that.
It was
an amazing set list, and basically every song that you want them to play, apart from one, they play. So
cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. And then, so it was obviously the Master of Puppets tour.
Yeah.
And then I guess, is it now the NEC, or was it the NEC and now it's something else?
No. So the NEC is different. The NEC is now, I'm not sure what it's called now. So the NEC is basically on the outskirts of Birmingham, and that's like a big exhibition center.
Okay.
This was a theater. So, weirdly, in 1988, it was converted into a cinema, and it's still a cinema to this day.
Oh, wow.
But so this was like a theater, you know, in the center of Birmingham. No, the NEC holds, I don't know how many it holds, but the Birmingham Odeon was, I'm not very good at judging capacity, but I think it was like 2,000, 3,000 people.
It's probably in that range. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's great. I guess that's where they were at the time, because they still hadn't broken big, still never done a video.
Exactly.
Right. So it's a strong underground presence. Word of mouth is strong. And there are a lot of those metal magazines. But for kids from the suburbs who didn't have like an older brother or a cousin to say, listen, kid, you got to listen to this. We didn't even know Metallica existed until Injustice for All, until one came on MTV.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, and I think I've said this before, but so for me, a friend of mine, I was like 13 years old. So this was like 1985, 13 years old. And I was a BMX kid, right?
So
okay. I was hanging out with some kids who were my age, kids who were a bit older, and we were listening to the soundtrack to that kind of group of people was either punk, like the Dead Kennedys, liked but didn't love, right? I didn't kind of gravitate towards it. But it was that plus hip hop. So like a really old school hip hop, like Run DMC and Grandmaster Flash and so
Slick
on.
Rick.
Yeah, which again, I kind of liked. It was kind of cool to hang out, but it was not something I gravitated towards. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so a friend of mine who was in that group basically gave me he was just learning to play the drums, and he gave me a C90 cassette. And on one side was Power Slave, and on the other side was Ride the Lightning.
Brilliant.
And so the two of those, Iron Maiden and Metallica together, were basically my introduction to metal. And so by 1986, you know, I was a full-on, you know, and that's kind of what I gravitated towards. So it's kind of like I'd heard hip-hop, liked it, but didn't grab onto it. I'd heard punk, I'd heard the Dead Kennedys, I liked it, but it didn't kind of grab me, but metal really grabbed me. And so that's kind of how I got Metallica. I can't overstate the importance of Metallica to me, right?
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. And what about Iron Maiden? I mean, they still just as high up there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say that, you know, I would say that now I probably listen. It's weird, actually, because I wasn't into Judas Priest at all back in the day, because I think by 85, 86, they were kind of doing Turbo and stuff. They were slightly, I guess, past their peak. And so Judas Priest didn't really feature. Now I love Turbo, by the way, but they were slightly past their peak, whereas I guess Iron Maiden was still in the ascendancy, because they were doing Slave and then Live After Death and then Somewhere in Time and then Seventh Son, which is my favorite Maiden album.
There you go.
So I didn't listen to, so now I think I listen to Judas Priest more than I listen to Maiden, but still Maiden, an absolutely completely formative band. Back in the day, I listened to Iron Maiden and Metallica religiously, probably every day for about 4 or 5 years during my teenage years, you know.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, and you're just catching up on Judas Priest. That's all.
Right.
Exactly. You didn't hear it for a while. So, hey, let's get caught. Nothing wrong with that. That's what I love about rock and roll, man. You miss a band, but they've got 12 albums. Great. Now you discover them. You've got 12. Instead of a new band's like, okay, I like this one album, and now I got to wait 3 years for the next one to come out. You know, so you've got a treasure trove of stuff out there. So that's cool.
Hi, my name is Renee Richardson from the Metallica Report, and you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf in London. Did I get that right?
All right. So now we've got these 20 incredibly well thought out research questions. Who did you go with to the show?
So this is the weird thing. I went on my own.
Just went by yourself.
And I was 14 years old. The weird thing about this is that I don't have any kids myself, but my sister has two kids and her oldest kid is 16. And to me, she is a kid.
Right.
And so I'm like, how did my parents let me go to this Metallica show 2 years younger than my niece now is?
Right.
And the answer is basically, for some reason, my there wasn't really that many metal friends I had in my school. There was a couple, but not really. For whatever reason, they weren't able to go or whatever. There was a local record store. So I grew up in a town called Worcester, which is about 25 miles south of Birmingham.
Okay.
It's a town of about 70,000 people. So it's like not tiny, but it's not huge. There was a local record store that were basically doing packages where you could buy a ticket and you could buy a coach, basically a bus going.
Yes.
That would take you from kind of Worcester bus station directly to the venue, and they would pick you up and they would bring you back. Right.
Right.
And I still don't know why my parents let me go. The only thing I can think is that my dad particularly was always very much like, you do your own thing, you know, earlier that year. So they were really into like sort of my parents were both teachers and they were both into kind of education and stuff. Earlier that year, I'd been on the French language exchange. So I'd basically gone to live with a French family.
Oh, yeah.
For 2 weeks. But I'd gone on my own. So I'd gone to France on my own. So I'd like got the train down to wherever it was. I'd got the boat. I'd got anyway. I think because I basically said, hey, look, you know, there's a dedicated bus which is going from Worcester bus station, which was like 5 minutes walk from my house. It's going to the venue. They're taking me into the, you know, it's basically you walk out of the thing, you go into the venue, you come out, you come home. And my mum and dad were like, okay.
Brilliant.
I had a Saturday job, so it was like, well, I paid for it myself.
Mm-hmm. You didn't tell them it was full of maniacs, though.
Yeah, well, the thing is, so the cool thing is that my parents were older, right? So my dad particularly was quite an old dad. So he didn't come from that. Neither of them came from that background of like, they weren't into like Led Zeppelin when they were growing up. You know, they were too old. Right. So they didn't really understand. I don't think they understood what they were
signing off on. Right.
And it was kind of weird because in some ways they were quite strict. They were very strict about, I never had long hair when I was, I wasn't allowed to have long hair and kind of look weird or whatever. But in terms of like, and even when I got a bit older, when I got older than 14 and stuff, going, you know, some of my friends had real arguments with their parents about letting them go to the pub and stuff. Whereas my parents were always pretty cool about it. They were always just like, look, don't get completely fucking hammered
right
on a Wednesday night. But if you want to go out and have a few beers and come home, it's like, that's fine. And so I guess because I never kind of overstepped the mark in that sense. But even then, you know, so the Metallica show, it's like, well, look, there's a bus. It takes you to the venue. It brings you back. There's kind of limited risk.
That's right.
And they were cool with it. So that was it. So I can't remember why my friends couldn't go, but for whatever reason, they couldn't. And I was like, well, I'm going to go. So I went.
That's amazing. And there's something about the English culture that they do that for rock shows. It was Neil from Def Leppard who told us, Jackson, that, I mean, he's from Liverpool, but I think he got the bus with his brother to go see Def Leppard at Birmingham. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was the same thing.
And which
was,
is not a 25-minute ride either. I mean, that's a long ride. And they made his older brother go with him. But still, this is like a culture. You buy a ticket and you get a ticket for the bus to take you to and from the show.
And I think it was the same thing. Like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, we can't get into any trouble. We're on a bus.
Yeah. And it was funny because, you know, they never, I don't know whether they twigged later on, but I never went to the Monsters of Rock. And I never went to Donington because I think that was kind of a bridge too far for them. They were a bit like, yeah, I don't know, man. It's like going in a field of like 80,000 people,
right?
Really hammered for like 10 hours or whatever it was. That seemed, that was like, they were like, nah, you're not doing that. So I wasn't allowed to do that. But I think this show they were okay with. And I did a couple of other shows that were similar. So yeah.
That's awesome.
No, which, and it's kind of interesting because I was thinking about this, and now lots of people I speak to don't really like going to shows on their own, and they like going as a group of people, but if they're on their own, they feel a bit weird. Whereas for me, I don't care. I go to shows on my own all the time, and I always have done. If I'm with somebody, or if I'm with somebody, then cool. If I meet somebody that I know, so like I was at the Decibel Metal Fest on Saturday in Philly, and I met up with a bunch of people that I knew from metal Twitter who I'd never met, but I kind of knew them. And that was really, really cool to hang out. But if I hadn't, I'd have gone there on my own anyway. I didn't care. So maybe it all goes back to that Metallica thing where I went there on my own and it was cool.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, some people would say that was brave. I just think it's cool. Yeah, my parents would have never let me go anywhere by myself. I'd always have to have a buddy or, you know, something to go to a show. Mm. And generally, I kind of wanted to, you know, share the experience. Now, as an older person, when my choice is take my wife or go by myself, it's a pretty easy decision to go solo these days, to be honest with you. What song is this? Okay, I'll tell you after the show. Just I'm listening. Why aren't you paying attention to me? Okay, you know, that's
it's almost over.
Yeah. Oh man. All right. But so Master had been out for about 6 months. I mean, had you listened to it back and forth 100 times by that point?
Yeah. I mean, I'd basically listened to it every day, multiple times for ever since it came out. You know, I just thought it was, as I said, like Ride the Lightning was my introduction to metal and to Metallica. I can't remember at what point I went back to Kill 'Em All, but either way, when Master of Puppets came out, I was just like, this is the most fucking incredible thing I've ever heard. You know, so
now were you already a budding musician at this point, or it had not happened yet?
No, I didn't start playing guitar until I was 16, so that was sort of a couple of years later. But I was all about, I was just all about riffs.
And so you were a James guy, not a Kirk guy. Not that you didn't like Kirk, but it was like, I'm going to try to be James.
Yeah, absolutely. I've never been interested in playing lead guitar, and maybe because I knew secretly that I could never do it. But I've always been a riffs guy. So I've always been a James guy, always been a Scott Ian guy. Yeah.
Well, and so you bring up Scott Ian, though. The opener on the tour was Anthrax, right?
Yeah.
And they had just released Among the Living, is that right?
No, so that hadn't come out yet. So Spreading the Disease, it was the Spreading the Disease tour.
Okay, gotcha.
So, no, I mean, they played. So, yeah, strictly speaking, you know, when people say, oh, who was the first band you ever saw? I say, oh, yeah, it was Metallica, but actually it was Anthrax because obviously it was a support band. And, yeah, I mean, I was just not prepared for the volume. You know, Metallica were probably twice as loud as Anthrax were, but even then, this was obviously the first gig I'd been to. But I was just like, they opened with AIR, and right. I remember this was just like that song by itself has a fairly kind of staccato, pretty sort of hard hitting intro, right? And I was just like, fuck, you know, I felt like Marty McFly in Back to the Future,
Back to the Future, yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, so Anthrax hadn't released Among the Living. That was 87.
Okay.
So they played stuff really, it was really exclusively from Spreading and from Fistful of Metal. They did play I Am the Law, I remember, which was a song that nobody recognized.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember thinking, this is cool, you know.
And they played God Save the Queen, right? Because they're in the UK?
Yeah, well, the funny thing is that, you know, again, I was a kid. I didn't understand. I had no history of music. I've looked up on Setlist FM and apparently they played God Save the Queen. But to be honest, I don't remember them playing that. And I wasn't aware. I knew about the Dead Kennedys and I think I knew about the Misfits, but I didn't know about Sex Pistols. I was 14, right? Gotcha. So I never heard God Save the Queen. So I looked on Setlist FM and it's like, oh, they played that. That's interesting. I can honestly say I don't really remember them. I don't really remember.
Yeah, because when they were big, we were like 5 or 6 years old. I mean, they came and went really fast, you know, I mean, yeah, right?
Exactly. I wasn't aware of them at all.
I hear you. Now, usually, I mean, when Jax and I were in college, we would go usually to someplace like Hooters and eat a bunch of junk food, maybe have a couple beers before we would go to the show, and then maybe have a little smoke in the parking lot before we go in. At 14, leaving your parents' house, did you have any kind of pregame ritual?
No, my pregame was to basically not sleep the night before because I was too excited, and then listen to Metallica, and from the moment I woke up until the moment I had to get the bus, that was it. There was no pregame. I would love to say that I was like sort of sneakily drinking loads of alcohol, but I wasn't. I was a good kid. So age 14, the pregame was disappointing because it was just being at home and my mum saying, make sure you have a good dinner before you leave.
Thanks, mum.
So yeah. I had a good dinner. I had a good home cooked dinner before I left.
Or an Almost Famous. And don't take drugs.
Exactly. I don't think she even kind of realized or even twigged that I would do that. So yeah, very similar. It was an Almost Famous situation.
That's great.
So what was the bus like? Because I'm trying to remember kids that I knew that were way into Metallica in 1986 from my hometown, and they were rough. These were like, you know, the mullet having, you know, they had the Metallica patches on the back of their jackets, and they were, they were rough.
Yeah, there was some of that, you know. It was definitely being exposed to people that maybe I hadn't been exposed to before. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of old, I guess I was one of the younger people on there. No girls, as I remember.
Sounds right. Yeah.
I saw Motley Crue on the Dr. Feelgood tour a few years later, and that was different. But yeah, the Metallica bus was, I remember it being kind of okay-ish on the way there. On the way back, everybody was completely smashed, apart from me because I was 14. But yeah, I remember the journey back being a lot livelier, and everybody basically singing Metallica songs all the way home.
Nice.
But the other way there was like, yeah, everyone was like pretty mellow. And it was like, nobody really took any notice of me because I guess I kept myself to myself. And it was pretty cool. I didn't feel nervous or anything.
So that's a little dichotomy from my Metallica going to the show at Slane Castle. You know, at Slane, they do a big concert every two or three years or so. And
yeah.
I guess this was 2019 that Metallica headlined, and also Ghost was there, and the Stiff Little Fingers, and a lot of the great acts have played there over the years. And I'm going there. My wife's a big marketing guru, and so I'm going there with some of her fellow marketing people. And they're all psyched to see Metallica. And some of them like, oh, my dad and I, we go see Iron Maiden together every year. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, this is going to be hardcore. And a lot of them had tattoos, but they were still like young and clean cut despite the tattoos. Like they were nice kids. They just had tattoos to be different kind of thing. And yeah, there were girls in really nice leather jackets. I'm like, how many times have you seen Metallica? I'm like, well, this is actually my first time, but I've seen this, this, and this, and that. And, you know, but when we used to talk, I'm like, well, I did see the Black Tour. They went, oh, that's amazing. Because I wasn't even born yet. I'm like, yeah, it was, you know, I'm just older than you. It wasn't that amazing. But yeah, it was cool. But, you know, but it's funny how the crowd has kind of moved that way. More females, more professionals. Not to mention, it's okay to be. You almost had to have a blue collar job, almost had to be a Metallica fan back then. It's not that way anymore.
No, I mean, I think with metal generally, right? I mean, so last weekend, I said, so the Decibel Fest, you know, I was hanging out with a guy called Bill, who's the metal heart surgeon on Twitter. And he's obviously a heart surgeon. There's a guy that was an optometrist and a guy that was an accountant. And it's like, you know, I used to be a lawyer back in the dim and distant. I mean, I do marketing now. But so it's like, I think now it's just become this huge thing that encompasses everybody. But you're right. Back in the day, it was definitely more blue collar than anything else.
Yeah, yeah. It's people who had had a bit of a hard life and this music spoke to them. It wasn't just, that's a great riff or, you know, it's an amazing guitar run he just did. It's like, yeah, I'm pissed off and this helps me remember how pissed off. Yeah.
Well, and I think you've got to remember too, back then, nothing was on the radio. So if you were a Metallica fan, you were all in. And it was kind of this little club that, you know, no one else knew about outside of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, we had, I don't know what it was like over in the US, but in the UK, we had, metal was never on mainstream radio.
Same way.
We didn't have any of these satellite radio channels, which you guys had in the US, I think. We had Radio 1, which was kind of the pop music channel.
Top 40, yeah.
And they had a program from 10 till midnight on a Friday that was called the Friday Rock Show. And that was the only time that you would hear metal. Now, when it got a little bit later, so 87, 88, when bands like Bon Jovi and well, I guess Slippery When Wet was 86.
Yeah.
Hysteria, I think, was 87. So 86, 87, 88, you started hearing Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, maybe Motley Crue, I can't remember. Europe, of course, I can't remember when the Final Countdown was, maybe 86. Mm-hmm. So you heard that on mainstream radio when it crossed over into the top 40. But for everything else, the only time you could hear anything like Metallica, not to mention anything heavier like Slayer or Creator or Dark Angel and stuff, that was 10 till midnight on a Friday.
And that's it.
Yeah, to the point where, so in my town, Worcester, there was a local, like a metal pub that used to have live music and so on. And bands wouldn't want to play on a Friday night because at like 9:30, everything would empty out. Everybody would go home to listen to the Friday rock show.
Nice.
Bands would only want to play on a Saturday because that's when all the metal fans and rock fans would go down to the pub and actually stay there. But yeah, certainly even when I got to drinking age, you know, Friday night was come home from school, do my homework because I was a good kid and listen to the Friday rock show. Like going to the pub on a Friday, that didn't happen. Saturday night was pub night.
Gotcha.
Friday night was Friday rock show night. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's so cool. All right. Well, how about whereabouts were you in the venue? So it's a theater. It's like a 2000 center. It's like Hammersmith, about the same size, I would guess.
Yeah, a little small. Yeah.
You know, you down low, you up high. About where were you?
Well, so I was on the floor and I was kind of probably towards the back of the floor on the right as you're looking at the stage. So I would have been between. So I guess I was between James and Kirk, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I wasn't like super at the front. I wasn't in the kind of mosh pit and stuff, but I was behind that, sort of behind the mosh pit on the right.
Okay, so this was general admission.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha. And what was the sound like? Was it like, I mean, I know it's loud as hell, especially for your first show ever.
Well, it's so funny because when I was looking at the questions that you'd sent through, the only thing that I wrote down was fucking loud. And Because obviously I had nothing to compare it to because I'd never seen a live band before, not even like in a pub or anything, like a covers band in a pub. So I remember being able to hear everything, but I remember everything being so loud that it was more of a feeling rather than anything else. You know, it's that feeling of the bass hitting you in the chest. And just that's really the overwhelming thing that I remember. Rather than, you know, now it would be like, oh, well, you know, I think that the lead guitars could be a little louder or whatever. I don't remember Kirk Hammett's leads shining through that clearly, I suppose. But then again, I was kind of projecting because I knew every note in that on that. Even by then, I knew every note in that record. So it's like, it's almost like what you can't hear, you sort of fill in your mind. You know what I mean? So
sure,
I knew
sure.
I was playing, even though maybe I couldn't hear it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So all I remember is I was blown away with the sound because it was very loud. And I remember Anthrax coming on, as I said, Anthrax came on and Anthrax was the loudest thing I'd ever heard. But then when Metallica came on, it was like twice as loud. Mm. And it was just like, this is fucking insane. I'm going to die.
Yeah, I think I remember we saw Kiss first, right?
Right. I think
that,
so.
And yeah, I think that was right. And that was loud. We saw him on the Revenge Tour. And I was like, that was loud. But when Metallica started, that was twice as loud, maybe an overstretch, but it seemed like that. It was, I thought the top of my head was going to explode. It was so loud.
I literally wasn't ready for it. Because in Kiss, it was general admission. And we kind of pushed our weight, you know, maybe to 10 people back or something like that. Metallica, we were half the venue away from them, at least, up on the side. And I wasn't ready for it. I'm like, oh my God, why do they have to play so loud? Oh my God, I wasn't ready for this. I'm like, I like it loud, but I don't know if I like it this loud. But you need those first few songs to get you ready because, as you will attest, Jackson, they wanted to tour with Alice in Chains.
Right.
But Alice in Chains was on tour in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did this little video backstage where they said the F word every like fourth or fifth word. Like, what the fuck is fucking up, fuckers? You know, we wanted to get Alice in fucking Chains to fucking open for us, but they're in fucking tour and in Europe, so we're gonna fucking come out there and fucking shove fucking metal down your fucking throat for 30, you know. Okay, and I get it. Your mom's not listening. You can say what you want to. Okay, I get it. But
the crowd was just, they just whipped them into a frenzy.
Yeah, that made them happy.
Yeah.
It was like, it was super loud. I mean, I've been to louder gigs since then. So I saw Slayer the following year, and that was insane.
Goodness.
But more recently, I saw Sleep, and that was loud. I saw Motorhead, and that was, you know, famously loud. But the loudest one, I think, is maybe about 5 years ago, I saw, I don't know how to say their name, but Sun O. You know, Sun, and then the brackets O.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know them, but I've seen the name.
They're kind of like a droney, doom metal-y, instrumental kind of band. And that was like, I'm probably an idiot, because I never wear earplugs at gigs. I never have done, and it's probably why I have terrible hearing now. But we walked in and there were people on the door giving out earplugs, and I was like, whatever. And when they started, it was just like, it was the most insane. It made Metallica sound like fucking Simon and Garfunkel. It was the most insane thing. And after about three songs, I was actually feeling quite dizzy. And I was like, I've got to get some headphones, some earplugs, because I'm gonna pass out otherwise. It was the weirdest experience.
Wow.
It was so weird.
That's heavy. But then we, you know, the first number of your age is a 5 now, Nigel. You gotta, you know, you can't do things the same way anymore.
No, but my hearing, it's too late. It's too late for my hearing. It's gone.
Gotcha. Well, what about the stage? I mean, didn't they have like the crosses, you know, from the Master of Puppets, like the album, but it was set up on stage like that? I didn't see it, but I've seen the videos.
Yeah, exactly. They did. And, you know, to be honest, because I was on the floor, the view I had was like kind of up and down and whatever. But they had that, which was pretty cool. Anthrax, I don't remember if they had anything, maybe a backdrop, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they had the sort of Metallica had the kind of the mock-up of the Master of Puppets cover. But yeah,
cool stuff.
And in terms of lighting, I think it's so hard because sometimes it's hard to remember what you remember from the time and what you've seen afterwards, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I know, your mind fills that in, and sometimes it romanticizes it, makes it even greater than it was, but from your best of your abilities, you know.
But yeah, it was definitely, the lighting was kind of like cool. It wasn't like completely, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like seeing Kiss or Rush or something, you know. It was that's the thing. I think you sort of think it was like Metallica were a big metal band for us, but they were still only playing in a 2,000 seat theater. So it wasn't,
they're a big garage band really at that point.
It wasn't
right?
A huge production, you know.
Yeah. All right. So what was your favorite moment of the night? Not necessarily the favorite song, but favorite moment where you're like, whoa, this is phenomenal.
I mean, it's really hard, but to be honest, I thought that the way, and again, I've checked this against setlist.fm with my memory, it's lined up. But the first, if a moment can last half an hour, then I think the opening half an hour, Battery into Master of Puppets, into For Whom the Bell Tolls, into Sanitarium, into Ride the Lightning. It was just like, my head's going to fucking fall off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think if I had to pick a specific moment, because obviously this is before the internet, before setlist.fm, you had no idea what they were going to play, right?
No way.
But I think Ecstasy of Gold going into the intro to Battery, some of which was recorded, but then when they, you know, just like they do now, right? They crash into it when the riff starts. And I'm like, oh my God, they're playing Battery. This is incredible. But then when they played Master of Puppets straight afterwards, it's just like, what? This is, and I had no idea, right? This is the Master of Puppets tour. Are they going to play the whole Master of Puppets album? I don't know. I had no idea because I was a kid. Right. But just to go, I remember that first half an hour was just like, this is, if I had to pick a moment at which I was converted to live music and which like basically set me on a course, which is continuing now, like 38 years later. Yeah, 38 years later.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that was probably it. It was that run of songs was like, this is an amazing song. 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 It's like, this is never going to end.
That's so cool. That's awesome. All right. So you're on the record. Justice is your favorite.
Yeah.
I think Master's my favorite, Jackson. It used to be, at one time it was Ride the Lightning. And you kind of introduced me to that one, Jackson. But I think now, I'd have to say Master's my favorite. I think it's their best.
See, I would say it's, and I know I'd said this before, and hopefully you can edit it out because it was not the true statement, that Injustice for All is my favorite. But no, it's Ride the Lightning. Mm. And I, like we were talking about before, you know, one came on and it's Metallica and, you know, they have other records, right? Oh, really? And then the second one I heard was Ride the Lightning, and I can listen to that start to finish over and over and over again. So yeah, that there's a, you can make a very strong argument that those first three records were the best. There's the after Cliff was gone.
Yeah.
It was a different deal.
Yeah, I think for me, so hard because it's like, for me, like Ride the Lightning was my introduction to metal. Mm-hmm. There's a claim for that for being the most important record to me. But then Master of Puppets was the first album that came out after I was a metal fan.
So that was yours. You got it.
That's the first one I remember coming out, you know.
Right.
But I think when Justice came out, I guess it was, maybe it's because by that point I'd seen them live, so I kind of had a point of reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also I just think even today, I think for a long time Master of Puppets was my favorite. But I think today, if I'm thinking which album do I listen to more often, it's Justice. Which album do I go to more often? And it's not to put any of those previous three down. You know, I think Kill 'Em All was absolutely groundbreaking. Ride the Lightning, my introduction to metal. Master of Puppets, the first album that they released when I was a fan and when I saw them, and is brilliant as well. But for me, the one I go back to the most these days is Justice. For me, it's just absolutely perfect.
Now, I will have to say, looking at the set list here, so you said Battery, Master of Puppets, but then song number three is For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Yeah.
And for me, the fact that you got to see Cliff play that,
yeah,
it's just awesome. I mean, Jason did a great job. Rob does a great job now, but that was his deal. He came up with that. It was his baby. And to see him, the fact that you can say you got to see him play that live is awesome.
It's, yeah, awesome. But you know, I mean, I think maybe we'll talk about this a bit at length because we haven't mentioned it yet. But the thing is that, and it's hard to explain, but at that time, right, being at that gig, we didn't know what was about to happen.
Of course not.
Right.
Right. And so for me, I was all about riffs. So for me,
okay.
It's not like I ignored Cliff Burton. I'm not gonna say that. But was he if I'd known what was about to happen, of course, I'd have been like 100% eagle-eyed focus on Cliff Burton.
Of course.
But I didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know. Nobody, of course, nobody knew, right? So, yes, it was great to see Cliff Burton do For Whom the Bell Tolls. Of course, it was great to see Cliff Burton. I have images in my head of seeing Cliff Burton. But at the time, was it like an incredibly seismic event? No, it wasn't. You know, I'd love to say that it was, but it wasn't.
Right.
I understand. I totally get it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to see him do Anesthesia, you know, I mean, yeah. In retrospect, you've got that. We've seen other people do it. We never saw Cliff do it, you know, so we will romanticize the fact that you got to see him. But yeah, you're 13, 14 years old. You've just gotten into this music. You're starting to like riffs. You're going to pay attention to what you like. And point of fact for our listeners, it was 7 days later.
Right.
Was the bus crash. 7 days.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And I was absolutely, this is the bit I do remember, I was absolutely devastated. So for me, I had, like everybody, I had four grandparents, but two of them had died when I was much younger. So I was like 5, 6 years old. Two of them lived much longer, right? Into their 90s. And so I was much older. So Cliff Burton was almost my first experience of somebody that I didn't know. Obviously, I didn't know him. Right? I didn't know him.
You weren't friends, but you knew who he was. You had communed with him.
Yeah. Cliff Burton was my first experience with somebody dying that I had seen a week before.
And I would imagine that there was probably a part of you that when you heard that said, well, that's it. The band's over.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. There's a good chance we'll never hear from them again.
I can remember going down. So my bedroom, probably because my parents wanted to put me out of the way so I can listen to this horrible music. My bedroom was like in the attic, right?
Gotcha.
I remember waking up and listening to the radio, and I can remember really clearly coming downstairs, and I said to my mum and dad who were having breakfast, and I was like, Metallica's dead. And my mum and dad were like, we don't know who you may as well be talking Leo Swahili. We've no idea what you're talking about. And that was the first reaction was, this band that I saw a week ago and this band that I love is done. They're completely done. And of course, what happened afterwards means that wasn't really worth them. But yeah, it's kind of interesting that I do remember that. I remember just being so, so affected by his death, even though, but yeah, you're right. I would love to say I was completely obsessed and focused on Cliff Burton at the gig, but honestly, I wasn't. Mm. I was aware of him being there, but I wasn't completely laser focused on him because I was all about riffs. You know,
same way when we saw Layne Staley in Alice in Chains, we saw him, you know, and we're like, oh, look at that goofball out there, you know, coming out doing the 5150 dance behind Sammy and like his jockstrap or something, you know, just being silly, like, okay, goofball. Yeah, whatever. Right? You know, then when he dies, it's like, I should have paid more attention when I saw him live. Right. You know, but
yeah.
You can't help that. You can't go in thinking one of these guys is going to die first. I'm going to, you know, laser focus on what. No, you're there to have a good time, right? So go have a good time.
Right. Yeah. It's not to say that I ignored him at all. I remember seeing him, but I wasn't focused on him. You know, in fact, the strangest thing about that gig, obviously, which maybe we'll talk about, is that James wasn't playing guitar.
Yeah, I saw that note on the set list. Yeah, he had
that's something that, you know,
wrist injury or something.
Yeah, he'd broken his arm or his wrist or whatever skateboarding, and so it was John Marshall, the guitar. I think it was Kirk's guitar tech or someone's guitar tech that was playing guitar. So James was just singing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a big story in Metallica lore, actually. And John Marshall also filled in for him with the Montreal incident when Axl Rose basically set the place on fire.
Oh, did he?
Well, here's what happened. They were doing this tour together. Guns N' Roses and Metallica. Was that 92, 93 when we were in college together, Jackson?
Yeah.
Guns on Use Your Illusion, Metallica on the Black Album. They would take turns opening and closing. Hetfield goes out. Metallica goes out first.
Mm-hmm.
He gets confused where he is. He gets over one of those big magnesium flash pots and it burns the shit out of his arm, basically. Oh, you know?
I remember reading that.
Yeah, it goes right up the side of him. Yeah.
I mean, just burn this, you know, and like his hair's coming off, and Kirk's like, he said it looked like the Toxic Avenger. His arm was bubbling like that, you know? So obviously they have to stop. You know, they can't go on. James has got to go to the hospital. Okay, Guns N' Roses can save the night by coming out and doing a great gig. But Axl was in one of his moods, and one of the security guys pissed him off, or someone almost gotten on stage, and he's like, threw the microphone home, and they trashed the place.
Oh, so I've seen that footage. So was that the night that James burnt his hat? Oh,
that was the night.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah. And so they don't like to disappoint their fans, so James is like, I can still sing, and John Marshall came out and did the rest of that tour until James could do it again. I don't know if he was with them. I mean, he may have been with them like when Kirk was in Exodus. He may go that far back with them. I knew he's like a buddy from the San Francisco days from old.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how far back they go. I think he was Kirk's guitar tech. I think you're right.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, you know, that was almost like the biggest disappointment was the fact that James wasn't playing rhythm because and again, at the time, it was like, did it ruin my enjoyment of the gig? Not really, because it still sounded amazing and all these incredible songs and so on. But I'm, as I said, I'm all about riffs. And so I guess it's interesting to know, and I had no point of difference, but I wonder at that time whether Metallica would have sounded better with James doing rhythm, because obviously he's a famously brilliant rhythm guitar player. I think he's best guitar player. Him and Malcolm Young are the best rhythm guitar players in the world ever, you know?
So yeah, it's interesting because I thought that same thing after he got burned up, because it was a while. I mean, it was several months before he could get back out there again. And I didn't see any of those shows live, but I remember thinking to myself, I think I'd be a little disappointed if you knew that going into it, that like, because again, I'm sure John played fantastic, but there's not like, he's just doing an impression. It's not the real deal. It's not the guy who wrote the riffs.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, I mean, Hetfield's got a way of attacking the, you know, and we can talk about how I've seen them later, more recently, but Hetfield's got a way of attacking the strings that... Nobody's got.
You feel bad for the guitar tech.
In exactly the same way that Dave Lombardo, you know, Slayer write brilliant songs and Paul Bostaph is a great drummer, but without Lombardo, it just sounds slightly, doesn't sound quite as good.
That's right.
Doesn't sound quite as good, you know.
Yeah. Now, was he moving around the stage? Because James generally stands in front of his mic because he's singing, but did he move around a little bit because he could do that?
Yeah, he moved around more. You know, he was not like running around like a crazy person, but he was running. He was definitely moving around more. He had the microphone in his hand. It was his left hand that was broken. So it was his right hand that he was holding the mic in. But yeah, he moved around. He moved around more, but he didn't look entirely. Look, again, at the time, I had no point of reference, so it looked great.
Right.
Thinking back, it's like he looks more comfortable being James Hetfield.
Right. Yeah, he's not Bruce Dickinson. He's got the guitar on, right?
He wasn't Bruce Dickinson.
All right.
Hi, my name's Stefan Shirazi from the Metallica Report, and you're listening to the Ugly American Werewolf in London.
Well, then how many times have you seen them, Metallica, over the years?
Also, it's weird because I was thinking about this, and for some reason, just like my friends missed the Puppets tour, for some reason they went to the Justice tour and I didn't see them on that tour. And I can't remember for the life of me now why I didn't go, but I didn't. So I missed them on that tour, which would have been 88 or possibly 89 in the UK, maybe even 90. I don't know. Anyway, I didn't go on that tour. And then I didn't like the Black album. And I still don't like, I don't love the Black album now. Right.
Okay.
Kind of, and also, you know, by then, early 90s, my tastes were broadening. So I ended up starting to listen to a lot more stuff like Zeppelin and Sabbath and Hendrix and The Doors, particularly The Doors. So I didn't see Metallica again until 2007.
Oh, that's a big gap.
A very big gap. You know, I went to tons of live shows. I saw Slayer a bunch of times. I saw Megadeth, but I didn't see Metallica. I can't remember why, other than that, I think I was just thinking, well, I guess I'm Metallica of sold out, whoever, which is, I know they did what they had to do, right? But
right.
So I didn't see them until 2007. I saw them at Wembley Stadium, which was pretty cool. That was a cool show. I saw them in 2011, which was the Big Four show that they did at Sonisphere in the UK, which was that was a sick show. But then most recently, I saw them last year in 2023. I saw them in Paris on the M72 tour.
Cool.
And the reason for that was really, I hadn't seen them, as I said, I hadn't seen them for a long time. Because I've kind of, guess over the years, I've kind of preferred to see more smaller shows and festivals and stuff. I've never really been interested in going to Download because it just seems such a huge festival. But there's a few great European festivals and UK festivals, like mid-sized, like Bloodstock and in the UK and Alcatraz in Belgium, where Metallica are too big to headline, right? So
sure.
They would only headline festivals like Wacken or Hellfest or which I've never been to. And so so I turned 50 in 2022 and I had a bit of personal stuff going on. But so last year I decided I was going to basically treat myself to a 50th birthday present, delayed.
Nice.
Well, I basically bought a ticket I had some flight credits and so I could fly to Paris for nothing. And I thought, fuck it, I'm going to buy a snake pit ticket for Metallica. So I only went I didn't go for both nights. I only went for one night and I thought, I'm going to, fuck it, this is a 50th birthday present to myself. And for me, that show was the best I've seen them since 1986. It was absolutely, they looked healthy.
Yes.
They looked trim. I think Hetfield looks like a guy that's like 30 years younger. body wise, I mean, they look super healthy. They sounded amazing. For myself, which I think I've caught some flack for on Twitter, for me, 72 Seasons is the best album they've done since Justice, right? Because I said I don't love the Black Album. I think since the Black Album was not that great, I thought Hardwired was okay.
Right.
But 72 Seasons I went into with limited expectations and I was like, this is fucking great.
Return to form. Yeah, no doubt about it. I love it. And it fit in so well with the new stuff. I mean, you saw them live. It was great live.
They just sounded great. They looked great. And again, you know, the fact that I was, I guess, so close to them, because I was in the Snake Pit, which I'd never done, it was just fucking brilliant. And it made me feel quite emotional again, because it's like, these are guys that I saw when I was 14, and they were probably, what, 24 or 23 or whatever they were, 25, however old they were. And all these years later, I don't know that they wouldn't know this, but it's like, all these years later, here we are again. And I'm just, I'm here again, seeing this band that meant so much to me and essentially put me on a certain path. And it was
amazing.
And I was so happy, because it's like, it's not like I was expecting them to be crap, but I was expecting them to be like, okay. But they just fucking blew me. They just blew me away, man. They were brilliant.
Well, I will tell you, I know Matt got to go see them live, and he can talk about that for 2 seconds, but I went to go see the launch party in the theaters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was one of the, I was like, it was like a Tuesday night. Okay, you know, I'll go for the show because we have something to talk about. But I got there and people were amped up, and to hear the music, but also see the guys on the screen. Yeah, they all look good. They all look like they were really excited to be doing this record. I said, something different about this. Something different there. This is not this is not going through the motions. This is a record they really wanted to make and get back out on the road.
Yeah, exactly. So also, was that the launch party for the album, but with the videos on the screen, or was it with interviews with them, or how did it work?
It was basically a movie theater. And so you went and you watched the movie. But the first thing I noticed was, like, I was the only person on a Tuesday night without a Metallica t-shirt on. You would have thought you were going to an actual show. And I'm like, you understand the boys aren't going to be here tonight, right? We're just having fun. But people were yelling. I mean, there was beer being thrown all over the place. People were up, jumping around, screaming, high-fiving. I'm like, this is the vibe was just, I mean, they were just animals. The level of fans that this band has all of these years later is insane.
It's amazing. I mean, it's like, yeah, and I think that's the thing. It made me so happy, was that it's like, this is a band that I grew up with, and look at them now. And obviously, they're all like bajillionaires, but more to the point, they still sound brilliant.
Right,
they did sound brilliant, and they look happy. And it's just, this is brilliant, you know.
And it's not a legacy. It's not a legacy act.
No, exactly. I think they were playing four songs from 72 Seasons each night. So the night I was there, they played You Must Burn, which is my favorite song off the album, actually. I think it's just brilliant. I can't remember. Oh, they played 72 Seasons, the title track. They played a couple of others. I can't remember. But oh my God, I remember coming away feeling like, this is how I remember feeling when I saw them in 1986. I was like, I was buzzing. I was absolutely buzzing. It's like, wow, man. This band that I grew up with are still sounding amazing. They look great. They sound great. They look like they're having fun. It was awesome. And by the way, just to go back to what I was saying about James Hetfield's riffing hand, because I was so close, there were certain songs where I was literally touching distance from Hetfield.
Wow.
Watching him playing was just like, man, you're absolutely fucking on the money, man. You are on the money. And it's like, you might be 60, whatever he is, 62, whatever old he is. But it's like, you can still do it, man. You're fucking bringing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, and I'm totally with you on all that. It wasn't just that they looked good, like they were in good shape and they had good color in their skin. They looked happy. They looked genuinely like psyched to go do this. And when I saw them in Amsterdam, that was the first night of Diverse two nights of those tours. So they're kind of like, oh, well, is this going to work? You know, how's this going to go?
Yeah.
And they just were earnest about, we're so glad to be here. And we're so glad you're here too. Yeah. And now we're going to kick your ass. Watch this. We can still do this. And they delivered. I was very emotional. I'm like, God, this is amazing. I'm so glad I'm here. Cause I bought the tickets when I lived in Amsterdam, and then we moved back to the US. And I'm like, I gotta get the plane. Yeah. I'm like, I gotta go back. I'm not, you know, I was gonna go home at night, but now I'm like, I'll just get a hotel room because I can't miss this. This is too important. You know, this is monumental. The first night of this epic world tour that's still going on, by the way. They pick it back up like later this month or something, don't they?
Yeah, they're playing it. They're playing in Europe. I think it starts in middle of May.
Yeah.
And I'm quite, because I only went to one night, I'm quite tempted to go because I live in Europe now, right? I live in Belgium. So they're not playing in Belgium, but obviously it's a lot easier. It's a bit closer to get to. But I know they're playing in Milan. They're playing a couple of dates in Germany. I'm quite tempted to go to another night just because, and you've no idea what they're going to play, but it's just like, oh man, I just want a bit more of that because it's like, if you know, it's like when I came away from that Paris show, I was like, if that's the last time I get to see Metallica, then I'm fucking happy.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm kind of thinking, I don't want that to be the last time I see Metallica.
Yes, exactly.
because they sounded fucking amazing, you know. So, yeah. It just makes me happy, you know. But there's a bunch of bands from those days that still sound really good. Like Overkill still sound great. Testament still sound great. Creator sound great. But Metallica, you know, it just made me realize that there's a reason why they've become the AC/DC of our, or the Led Zeppelin of our generation. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that night made you realize it's like, fuck, they're just the best. They're just the best. They are.
They really are. No doubt, man. And so how has their music influenced you with your music in Chupacabra?
Hetfield, basically. You know, mm-hmm. I've always been far more interested in riffs than in guitar solos. I know Kirk Hammett gets a load of shit, but you know, regardless of that, it's for me, great riffs are the basis of metal, whether it's Priest, whether it's Maiden, whether it's Ghost, whether it's
Sabbath.
Like, Sabbath, of course. Any type of metal, it all comes essentially down to the riffs. And for me, you can't fucking beat what Hetfield's doing, you know. And while I think that Chupacabra is heavier than what Metallica does, it's much more in a kind of a Slayer mold and stuff. I think that what I love about Metallica is the riffs. And I think that that's what drives everything, you know. I think there's certain types of metal which is all about solos and all about technicality and stuff. And that's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. One of my favorite thrash bands is Coroner, right? And Coroner are very technical, very hard to play. I can't play any of it. But that's the thing, right? Metallica is actually relatively easy to play. It's not that hard to play. It's very hard to play correctly.
Right. It's hard to write it, but once you do it, it's you very know, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's very hard to write. It's very hard to play correctly. Whereas some stuff like trying to play stuff off Sound of Perseverance by Death is like, that's just, it's like a brain melt. You know, it's just, it's too hard. Whereas most Metallica is relatively straightforward. It's just that to play it properly is really, really hard. And I think that Hetfield is one of the greatest guitar players of our generation, not because he's incredibly technical like a Malmsteen or a Eddie Van Halen,
right,
but because what he does rhythmically is just so fucking brilliant. It's so tight and it's so groovy, right? And so, yeah, if I could think of one thing that they've influenced me, that would be it. It's Hetfield's rhythm playing.
Yeah, and I saw Lars on Eddie Trunk's show once, or maybe that metal show, and he's talking about, well, you know, Tony Iommi, he's the riff master. He goes, no, James Hetfield, dude. Mm. I'll take James Hetfield every day of the week, which is a little bit of blasphemy. He's like, okay, fine, 1A. He's 1A. Do you want to put Tony 1? James Hetfield's 1A. And I got to agree because, I all due respect to Black Sabbath, and I love Sabbath and all. Sabbath brings you down. Metallica doesn't do that. It lifts you up. And that's the brilliance of James Hetfield.
Yeah. I mean, it's the urgency of how he plays. You know, Iommi's amazing as well. You know, if I'd written fucking War Pigs, I'd be a pretty happy guy, right? But yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, but I think that the stuff that Hetfield was doing, as I said, I kind of didn't think the Black Album was the greatest thing that lots of other people seem to think. But what he was doing on those first four albums was just absolutely groundbreaking, you know? And I think a lot of that was Cliff, right? I think it was a combination of Hetfield's riffs, but then what Cliff brought to it with the whole stuff and the classical training and so on. But the foundation of it is Hetfield's riffing, which is, that's why they are who they are, I think.
Mm. Absolutely.
I didn't take any notice of when they were playing, but now is a really big deal, is that they brought Brian Tatler out on stage to play Am I Evil.
They brought who out stage?
Brian Tatler, who's the guitarist of Diamond Head.
Oh, from Diamond Head. Okay. Oh, geez.
And it wasn't until years later that I realized who Brian Tatler was, because I didn't pay any attention to who Diamond Head were, right? You just, right. That Metallica, you just knew that Metallica had done this cover of this song called Am I Evil, which is on the Creeping Death 12-inch. But they brought Brian Tatler out on stage. And I was like, who's this guy? I remember, who's this guy?
Yeah.
It sounded okay, but I was like, all right. And so I think one of the questions was, yeah, just about what any regrets about the show. And that was the biggest one, is that when Brian Tatler came out, I was like, I have no idea who you are. I don't know if I want to use that or not, but I just thought I'd mention that because I remember it as a clear memory.
Yeah. Sorry about my naivete at the time. I was 14 and didn't know. Yeah. I bet there's a couple of those back in the day where it means more now when you tell somebody you were there, but at the time it was like, what's going on? I don't know.
Well, I think for the older, you know, for the people who were slightly older, who were maybe into the new wave of British heavy metal back in 79, like when Maiden were first starting and Saxon starting and Priest were on their third album or whatever. But I wasn't. I didn't know any of that stuff. So maybe other people knew who Brian Tatler was, but I had no fucking idea.
I can imagine you there. Everybody's cheering. Hey, it's Brian Tatler. And you're like, who is this guy?
Yeah. Brian, who?
Yeah. There were five guys and now there's six guys. Okay. Yeah. Great. Okay. Yeah, whatever. I can't miss that bus home. Mom and Dad are going to be pissed off, you know? I guess you got home.
Yeah.
And your ears were ringing. You probably couldn't sleep at night either.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, I was a good kid, right? I wasn't like a tearaway or anything. So I was kind of like, I guess I was aware, you know, my mum and dad like trusted me to they held their end of the bargain. So I thought, well, I should hold up my end of the bargain. So I was kind of nervous about getting the bus home, but it was kind of fine. So I got on the bus and went home and everyone was singing fucking Master of Puppets at top volume and it was fine. But I remember just going to bed and lay in bed and I was awake just like with my ears just like, what the fuck have I just seen? Because it was loud. I'd never experienced anything like that before. And I was just like, I was so buzzed, you know?
I know that buzz.
Yeah. What day was that? Did you have to go to school the next day?
No.
Okay.
So my dad was the principal of the school I was at.
Oh, that's heavy.
So luckily it was a Saturday.
Okay.
If it had been a Friday, it'd have been fine. If it had been any other day, I'd have been like, "There's no way. There's no fucking way I would have been allowed to go." But because it was a weekend, I was lucky that I was. The next day was a Sunday, and so it was cool.
Where can people find more information about you or Chupacabra, my friend?
Well, actually, if you follow me on Twitter, which is Nige Savage, NigeSavage on Twitter, that's probably the best. That's where I'm most active. In terms of Chupacabra, as I said, we released an EP last year, which was pretty well received. The new album is written. We're currently doing vocals for it. We're hoping to get it out this year, but we have no pressure because we have no record label or anything like that. So it'll be ready when it's ready. But yeah, Twitter is the best place to get hold of me.
And probably the best place to get hold of us. I think we're on all the rest, but you know, Instagram, you can find us. Facebook, sure, yeah, why not? But Twitter or whatever they call it now, that's where we met, basically, right?
Of course. Yeah. But you know, I think Twitter is just the metal Twitter community is just so amazing. Even like, as I said, like, so like this a few days ago at the Decibel Metal Fest in Philly was just like, I turned up there knowing nobody, but I did know people because people that I'd met just randomly on Twitter. So I turned up, I was like, oh, hey, I'm Nige from Twitter. And they're like, oh, hey. And it's like, suddenly you have these seven or eight people that all know who you are, not because you've ever met, but because you've just interacted on Twitter. And I think, I don't know, I don't know any other, I don't really know deeply about any other genres of music, but I would be amazed if there was any other genres of music that had the same level of community that metal does, and specifically metal Twitter. I don't know about Facebook because I'm not on Facebook, but it's just really, it's amazing. Like the combination of the bands that are on there, the podcasts like you guys, like the Shout It Out Loudcast guys, who are obviously a Kiss podcast, but I'm not a huge, I've told those guys, I'm not a massive Kiss fan, but I listen to those guys because they're fucking entertaining.
Exactly. I tell them the same thing. I'm like, you're the only show I listen to every week. It's not because I need to listen to what you think of the fourth disc of the Creatures of the Night box set that I'm never going to buy. It's because you guys make me laugh and we like a lot of the same stuff. They're our same age. So
yeah,
they're great, you know?
Exactly. And then there's a few podcasts that I listen to that are like more kind of extreme metal, like death metal, thrash and stuff. But the combination of all those things together is just like, it creates this community that's just, I've never known anything like it. And it's almost like I feel like I've got more friends now than I ever have had just because of people liking the same music, which is just fucking amazing.
And that's why we do the show. Because
exactly.
Jackson and I love to talk to each other about this stuff, but we know we can't talk to our wives about it. We can't talk to our friends about it. You know, he's doing it again. He's talking about some guy that he was in Tigers of Panther. I don't even know who the hell they were. You know,
I don't care about what happened in 1986.
Yeah, exactly. There's people out there in the world like us, and we can find each other. So we're going to transmit our beams out there and see what comes back to us. And we love the folks we've met through the show and basically through social media.
Yeah, exactly. And what you guys do is, you know, honestly, I think that podcasting is the new media, right? It's like the way that what you guys do is as important as metal magazines were back in the 80s. I really believe that, because listening to what you guys do and other podcasts do, that's how you find out about new bands. And this is how you find out interviews with artists and with listeners and with fellow fans. And it's so important, I think.
Well, I thank you. And I agree with you. And it's fun to do. And we're not in it for the money. We're doing it for the community. We're doing it for fun. We're doing it because something's got to keep you sane in this world. And you're traveling all over America when it's starting to get hot in some hotbeds. Atlanta, there's some social unrest in Atlanta, but DC, there's always shit going on. New York, I don't even know if I want to go to New York right now. So you're a brave man.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't have the best time in New York. It was fine. But in Atlanta, I really liked. I'd only been there once, but like 20 years ago. I had a good time in Atlanta, and DC, I only arrived last night. So it's pretty cool. Life is
all good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Nigel, we can't thank you enough, man. This has been a fun hang, and we can't thank you enough for listening to the show, man. It always blows us away when someone will write us a letter or something, or email, even something on the socials, say like, hey, man, I dig your show. You know, keep doing it. Or that was a cool interview. Thanks so much for going into that. I'm like, well, he'd have to do that. You know, that's I appreciate that. It probably means more to us than it should, but I just want to let you know that it means a lot. We appreciate it.
Oh, well, hey, no worries, man. And thanks again for using my tunes as your music, because I really appreciate that as well, because that was just something I knocked out. And it's like, if you guys like it, then you like it. And if you don't, then I wouldn't be offended. So I'm really happy that you use it. And you guys keep doing what you're doing, because it's wicked.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. You're the man. All right.
The thing that...
Much love, man. We appreciate it. We'll get this out on May 1st.
That's cool, man. That's really cool. I love what you guys are doing. I think this first Concert Memories is such a cool thing. And it's one of those things where you think, I'm amazed that nobody's thought of doing that before. Because everybody has a first concert memory, whether it's fucking metal or whether it's Coldplay or whether it's Taylor Swift or whoever it is, you know? It's just... It's the coolest thing.
Thanks for everything.
Love to see it.
All right. Safe travels in the U.S. Watch out for the weirdos.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
We thank our longtime listener, Nige Savage, for coming on to talk to us about seeing Metallica play live on the Master of Puppets tour in 1986, just a scant 7 days before the death of Cliff Burton robbed us all of his metal greatness. Nige is just a cool guy. He's obviously a talented musician in his band Chupacabra, and he is responsible for our intro and outro music on our weekly show, The Ugly American Werewolf in London. It's just great to share this story with him. I think that's what's so great about this first Concert Memory show, is that artists and musicians can come in, or writers and journalists, other podcasters, or just music fans can come on. If you've got a great story to talk about the night that you saw a particular band live and how it changed your life, this is the show for you. And when Nige related that was his first Metallica concert, we knew not only did we want to hear the story, but we figured, we can't pay him for his music. Maybe this would be a good way to pay him back. But a great guy. You can follow him on Twitter, or X as it's called now. And you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Threads. We're all over. And you can let us know the bands, the music that you want to hear us talk about on First Concert Memories or on Ugly American Werewolf in London. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. Please make sure you subscribe and download wherever you get your podcast. Doesn't really matter where. But if you're thinking about it, folks, please give us a positive review on that service. Doesn't matter where, but it just means the world to us, and it helps us find more rock and rollers like you, helps us grow the show. And if you send it to us, we might just read it on the show. Thanks as always to Pantheon Podcast for making us part of the family, which features the official Metallica podcast, The Metallica Report. And thanks to our amazing sponsor, RareVinyl.com, where if you use the code UGLY at checkout, you can save 10% off your entire order of rock and roll treasures. That's it for this month's first concert memories. We've got a couple of great ones lined up for the future that we think you're really going to love. So stay tuned and keep going to see live music. It's the best way for you to keep rock alive.